हरे
It was inevitable that Abhay would think of engaging Mahatma Gandhi in devotional service. Because of his lifetime of courageousness, ascetic, and moral activities on behalf of his countrymen, Mahatma Gandhi had great power to influence the Indian masses. As with Mahendra Pratap of the World Federation, Mahatma Gandhi's idea of serving God was to try to bring happiness to man through politics and through his own invented methods. As one Englishman had said of Mahatma Gandhi, he is either a saint among the politicians or a politician among the saints. But be that as it may, he was not yet as fully engaged in pure devotional service, and his activities were not those of a Mahatma as described in the Bhagavad Gita. The Gita defines a Mahatma as one who fully engages in worshiping Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, always chanting his glories. The Mahatma encourages others to surrender to Krishna. Right? So in other words, they're following Gita, they have this idea, there's this nice sentiment, but it's not exactly according to what is Krishna defines. Right? In other words, a living entity is going to act according to a few things. One is the inherent nature that they are their servant. Two is that there's always the concept that there's something superior. And the idea is that by being in contact with that superior being, I will be happy. So then there'll be a process by which I can become in contact with that supreme being. Right? It's inherent in the soul. These qualities. So we'll see that people will do that. But the problem is that why are they doing it? Who are they actually trying to please? Right? So here, through politics, through making nice arrangements for the countrymen, all these different things, then it appears that they're saying that, you know, God's in control and karma and all these nice things, qualities that you must have that the Gita has. But their whole purpose of that is to make themselves happy, right? But not making themselves happy by the process of making God happy, right? So that's foolish. It means it's just like, let us say you have you and your friend, and there's some food, right? So you're only interested in yourself eating that food and becoming happy, right? You wouldn't call that so much of a friendship, right? Now, if you're happy that seeing that you have this food, you share it with your friend, and seeing to their being happy, that will also make you happy, right? You understand? So this is the choice. It's not a matter of, oh, well, if I don't work for my own happiness, I won't be happy. No. If you properly work for Krishna's happiness and the devotee's happiness, you will automatically be happy. Does that make sense? Yeah? So that is the point, is that this element that two things happen at once. But where is the focus, right? Of the two, there's always focus on one, right? Just like if you milk a cow, this is called a ditransitive verb, right? You've heard of transitive? Intransitive? Okay, so ditransitive means it does two things at once. Okay, now if you milk a cow, okay, the cow gets milked. So that has been that you got the milk out of the cow, right? But at the same time, is there's a bucket there. Did the bucket get filled up? Right? You understand? So you don't have to focus on filling the bucket. You have to focus on milking the cow. Does that make sense? That's the point. When the cow is milked, then there'll be milk in the bucket. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. So in the same way is that you don't have to concentrate on your own happiness. It's automatic when you serve the Lord. Right? The example is given if you feed the body by feeding, you know, eating in the mouth and swallowing, does the hand get benefit? Right? But now if the hand picks up the food and smooshes it around and all that and holds on to it all day, will it get benefit?
No.
So that's the point, is that what you're looking for you can get by serving Krishna. Does that make sense? Like that, trying to, you know, coming up with different ideas of how the hand will get benefit. Some will say by mushing it, some will say that's yucky, no, you just hold it very nicely. Some will say, well, but, you know, then, you know, the effect of the air, then so much nutrients is lost, so you should put it in your hand and then tie your hand up with a cloth. Some will say, well, that's a bit crude, you should use a glove. So you put it in your hand and then put a glove on. You know, so, you know, I mean, there'll be different concepts on how to do that. More sophisticated, the glove would have a little zipper, so you have your zipper, you put a glove job, and then you zip it up again. You know, these different kinds of things like that. Some will say that if you put it on the front, then it doesn't, how you say? You don't get as much benefit in the use of the hand, so they'll put it on the back of the hand, right? So the front is more free for different work. But some will claim that the main chi is coming from the front of the hand and the palm, so you definitely want to put the gulab in the palm, not on the back. What would you think? So that's how modern philosophies work. You understand? They work because people don't understand actually what's going on. There's a sentiment. That's why it's so, in one sense, so nice. You have this man, he's willing to go through all kinds of difficulty for his country, right? So much austerity, being put in jail, being beaten, being ostracized, right? What does ostracized mean? It means you get the guy out and you cover him with all kinds of very large plumage or something like that. That's how you ostracize him. That would be, you know, ostrich?
Yes.
Yeah, so ostrich has very long feathers, so you get the guy and cover him with feathers, so you ostracized him or something. Yes?
So ostracized means like put down or like...
Yeah, it means you make them, you throw them out of the group, you keep them on the outside, you know, it means officially, they're thrown out, they're tossed out, like that. You know, they can't come in, things like that, so they're... So whatever it is politically or socially or, how you say, genetically or different kinds of things like that. Whatever it may be, he went through so much trouble for his countrymen. And because of this, the people appreciate it. Yes?
As you mentioned about that, you know, we can get whatever we want from Krishna. But some devotees, they have a concept that they say that when we ask Krishna, it might happen that Krishna may purify us from that particular desire.
And then you won't have a problem if that happens.
But right? They don't want to get purified.
So then that's lack of sincerity or just foolishness. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like this. The point is I have the desire. That's the only reason I want to deal with it, right?
Yes.
So now if that desire goes away, I don't have to deal with it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. If you deal with it in connection with Krishna, then that will mean that the desire will be fulfilled and you won't need to fulfill it anymore. Right? Because the point is what are you going to get more from? Interacting with material nature or interacting with Krishna?
Interacting with Krishna.
Yeah, so that's the point, is that it's just like this. Let us say you have an attachment to, you know, running your own business And, you know, every day you make 1 rupee profit from this. Okay? Now, if you recognize that actually the whole economic system is happening under Krishna's direction, and therefore if you do this business in connection with Krishna, then you'll make, you know, 1,000 rupees a day profit, or 10,000, or 1 lakh, which would be better. Yeah, so you might lose your interest in the 1 rupee profit. You know what I'm saying? Just like the child, they're eating mud, right? And then the mother gives them sandesh. So in that process, they lose their taste for mud. So is that a bad thing? No. So that's what's going on, is that it's whether, if you do things in connection with Krishna, you get satisfied, right? The kid's happy eating mud, but once he tastes sandesh, he's happier eating sandesh. So the point is they're happy. We're thinking is that if I give up the desire I have now, I won't have anything. But the point is that happiness comes in connection with Krishna. Right? That's the point. Is that okay? Yeah? So these people like Mahatma Gandhi and that, they work very hard. They have, in one sense, they have very strong sentiment to help others or work with others and that. But because they're not seeing the complete picture, they're not seeing it in connection with Krishna. Therefore, it falls short. So just because politically they arrange a nice situation for the countrymen doesn't mean that it'll actually create the what they wanted. Right? He worked so hard. He worked basically his whole life. You know, once he was educated and everything like that, finished his schooling, from that time he actually started these independence movements. Right? First he started in South Africa. Right? And then from there he came to India. Or he was invited to India. So coming to India, then he spent his whole life. Right? And he worked, and he got the political freedom that they were claiming would make them happy. They actually got it. The point was freedom from the British. So they got the independence. But the point was is that the Indian culture is so nice and the British are opposing it. They're saying it's not good. The Western culture is better. So then he goes through all this trouble. They get their independence. And now, where is that culture? Right? Where is the nice, where is the Indian culture? The village culture, all these fine things, where is it? Is Calcutta nice? No. Before independence, Calcutta was considered the second nicest city in the British Empire. That means after London, it was the best city. Right? And they had something, I don't know, so many, like 60 countries under them. It was the best city. Right? So that means it possibly could have been the third nicest city in the world. Right? You had Paris, you had London, and you had Calcutta. Think of that. Calcutta, the third nicest city in the world. As far as aesthetics, as far as nice management, they used to wash the streets in Calcutta twice a day to keep it clean. In the morning and evening, they would wash the streets. Or probably morning and afternoon.
With
rose water. Yeah? Yeah. Now, is that a nice city or not?
Yes.
Okay? So, after independence has gone from that into what we know now as the dustbin of Calcutta. Some have even called it the armpit of the universe. You know what I'm saying? So, he worked so hard, but what did he actually get? Because if it's not in connection with Krishna, you won't actually become happy. That's the problem. What do you think? Yes? Okay. So you're always working to do everything in connection with Krishna. So now, you're playing marbles. Okay? And while you're playing marbles, You want to win, right? But how is it that you'll win? By your own ability or by Krishna's mercy? Okay, by Krishna's mercy. So do you pray to Krishna to win your marble game? Or you just think, I'm so expert, therefore I'll win my marble game? You understand? So even if you want to play marbles, then you have to know that you're going to win because Krishna's grace. Krishna will give you the ability and the intelligence. You know what I'm saying? So the point is anything that you're doing should be in... It means, in other words, if it's pure devotional service, that's the best. But even if it's not, still it has to be in connection with Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes? Yes.
When you say connection with Krishna, that means that we are connecting that through our consciousness, right?
Through our consciousness in some way. By Krishna's grace we're able to do, or the result is for Krishna, or some way, you know what I'm saying? Just so we can have the situation or perform the activity to get our own result. It's not so, you would say, high-grade devotional service, but the point is you've connected it to Krishna, so that makes it special, makes it different. You know, in other words, of the material things, it's way beyond that. It's way above that. Within spiritual, it may be lower. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's the point. Is that connecting it to Krishna automatically makes it special. Now, within special, there's gradations. Right? The difficulty is we tend to not see gradations, right, in spiritual. It's interesting that we can note gradations within material or between spiritual and material, but not in spiritual, right? In material, we can make so many gradations. Then we have material and spiritual. Then we can tell only that too. And then when it gets into spiritual, we can't tell any difference. Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is that we're very, very careful here, is that if there's so much unlimited material variety, imagine how much more spiritual variety, since this is a reflection of the spiritual world. Right? So we always have to see that. So on the material platform, connecting to Krishna is always better. Right? But now, within spiritual, then it becomes, there is gradation. Right? So whatever position one's in, one can connect that to Krishna, no matter what it is. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Yeah? And if we connect it to Krishna, then we'll get purified. Right? Does that make sense? So, beginning, we will pray to Krishna that we win for our own benefit the marble game. Then after a while we want to win for Krishna, and then after a while we'd rather be doing something else. You understand? Like that. Does this make sense? So you can have very nice, sincere, or at least seemingly sincere people about doing others' benefit. But unless that benefit is in connection with Krishna, the benefit will always be temporary and generally will never be what they expect it will be. Does that make sense? So that's important. So therefore you have nice people that have good qualities that you can somehow or another connect to Krishna. Yeah?
Yes.
But it doesn't mean those qualities stand on their own. Okay? Yes? No?
Yes.
Very good. Only one green monster representing today.
One and a half.
Oh, one and a half. Okay. Like that. In other words, he's not a green monster, but he thinks like one. I see. And he is a green monster, but he doesn't think. Is that what that means? Trying to figure this one out, right? Okay. But because as a young man... Oh, okay. The Gita defines a Mahatma as one who fully engages in worshiping Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, always chanting his glories. The Mahatma encourages others to surrender to Krishna. Right? In other words, a Mahatma is one who's always absorbed in Krishna and always trying to get others to be absorbed in Krishna. Yes? No? What is this little thing that keeps moving? Some little folded up little something. You had it last. What is it? Oh, the sticker. Okay. Okay, so can you guys kind of leave all that? So can you leave the sticker alone? Right. Okay. But because as a young man, Abhay had been a follower of Gandhi's, Abhay had a special feeling for him. Of course, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had later convinced him to engage exclusively in devotional service. But now Abhay felt his old friendship for Gandhi, even though Gandhi was a towering figure of worldwide fame, and Abhay unknown both to Gandhi and to the world. On December 7, 1947, Abhay wrote to Gandhi from Kanpur. Gandhi was living at the Birla Mansion in Delhi, where large military forces throughout the city discouraged Hindu-Muslim rioting. Gandhi's secretary, Pyarelal Nair, described Gandhi at this time as the saddest man one could picture. The men he had led in the struggle for Indian independence, Jawaharlal Nehru, Vallabhbhai Patel, and others, had taken the leadership of the nation. And Gandhi, with his doctrines of nonviolence, unity, and agrarianism, was now at odds with them in many ways. He feared he was becoming an anachronism. What's an anachronism? Right? Something like a anaras, you know, a pineapple. So he was worried he was becoming the symbol of pineapplism or something. Yeah? The anarism, so. Yes? No? Not sure. Anachronism means something like that is, it has no meaning anymore, it has no value. You know, some old kind of thing that, you know, at one time was like that, nice, you know, but now it doesn't really mean anything. Kind of like a symbol, you know, it's like there, but it doesn't have any meaning. Yes? You know, like you used to be, last year you were the marble champion of the Gurukul, but this year you're not, so. Nobody, before everybody, you know, wanted to play when you were there. They wanted to invite you to play with them, and you were teaching them everything about marbles and everything like that, and so you were, you know, you were the man, right? But this year others are much better at marbles, and no one even cares about you. So if you come around, they're all pleasant and nice to you because you were the marble champion last year, but this year, who cares? Does that make sense? Yes? No? Like that. So that's an anachronism. Okay? Yes? His former colleagues admired him but rejected his leadership. All his programs, Hindu-Muslim unity, nonviolence, upliftment for the poor, although praised throughout the world, were failures in India of 1947. On a recent visit to a Muslim refugee camp, a crowd of Muslims who surrounded his car had cursed him, and at a public prayer meeting, a Hindu crowd had shouted him down and ended his meeting when he had attempted to read from the Quran. At 78 years, Gandhi was physically weak and melancholy. What's melancholy? It's kind of like he's, yes?
Sad.
Sad. Nothing to do with like a watermelon or something. He was walking around feeling like a watermelon or something. A watermelon that leaks. A crying watermelon. Okay. Yes. Yes. A melonized collie dog or something. Okay, you met Lassie with a watermelon head or something.
Or a watermelon with a lassi head. Like that. Yes? Or it could be a watermelon that's been offered to Ma Kali. Yes? Okay. So we'll stick with the item that it means he was very sad, right? So he said he was the saddest man one could picture. So that's melancholy. Right? So in other words, he worked so hard, all these people supported him, then they got independence, what they wanted. But because of the nature how it was done so politically, then it created political problems. Right? It means they gained on one side, but they lost on the other. Right? They had their own unity, but they were under the control of the British. Then they got free from the control of the British, they lost their unity. Right? So only with Krishna can you get both. Does that make sense? Otherwise, it's this or that. Right? You have the gulab, you can put it in your right hand, or you can put it in your left hand. Right? You can't have it in both. Right? Of course, you can put it in your mouth. That's neither will have it. But. In all likelihood, Abai's letter would never reach him. Abai knew it. Sending a letter to Gandhi would be like putting a note in a bottle and sending it to sea. It would arrive in the flood of mail, and Gandhi would be too busy to see it. But Abhai sent it nonetheless. Right? It's his duty, so he sends. Dear friend Mahatmaji, please accept my respectful namaskar. I am your unknown friend, but I had to write to you at times. But I had to write to you at times and again, although you never cared to reply them. I sent you my papers back to Godhead, but your secretaries told me that you have very little time to read the letters, and much less for reading the magazines. I asked for an interview with you, but your busy secretaries never cared to reply this. Anyway, as I am your very old friend, although unknown to you, I am writing to you in order to bring to you the rightful position deserved by you. As a sincere friend, I must not deviate from my duties towards a friend like your good self. I tell you as a sincere friend that you must immediately retire from active politics if you do not desire to die an inglorious death. You have 125 years to live as you have desired to live, but if you die an inglorious death, it is no worth. The honor and prestige that you have obtained during the course of your present life were not possible to be obtained by anyone else within the living memory. But you must know that all these honors and prestiges were false inasmuch as they were created by the illusory energy of Godhead called the Maya. By this falsity, I do not mean to say that your so many friends were false to you, nor were you false to them. By this falsity, I mean illusion, or in other words, the false friendship and honors obtained thereby were but a creation of Maya, and therefore they are always temporary or false, as you may call it. But none of you, neither your friends nor yourself, know this truth. In other words, you say it's not that they didn't sincerely try or weren't trying to do something, but because it's not connected to Krishna, it's still an illusion. It's like one may very sincerely try to pick the fruits and flowers off the tree reflected into the pond. Right? You may try your best, but it doesn't mean it'll work because you're an illusion about where the actual flowers are. Does that make sense? A sadhu is not supposed to flatter, but to cut. This is the basis of his friendship, that he cuts away the illusion of the materialistic person. Mahatma Gandhi, forsaken by his friends, bitterly disappointed at the outcome of the long, hard struggle for Indian independence, and apprehensive about the future, had been reduced to a position in which he might be able to realize that his friends and work were ultimately illusory. Thus, it was the perfect time for him to comprehend Abai's message, continuing the letter. Now, by the grace of God, that illusion is going to be cleared, and thus your faithful friends like Acharya Kripalani and others are accusing you for your inability at the present moment to give them any practical program of work
as you happen to give them during your glorious days of non-cooperation movement. You are also in a plight to find out a proper solution for the present political tangle created by your opponents. You should therefore take a note of warning from your insignificant friend, like me, that unless you retire timely from politics and engage yourself 100% in the preaching work of Bhagavad Gita, which is the real function of the Mahatma, you have to meet with such inglorious deaths as Mussolini, Hitler, or Lord George met with. Right? In other words, it doesn't end very nicely. There, he's just going by that you see that these great personalities, any great political personality, generally his, you know, especially if they were very absorbed in the political field, never ended nicely. It just doesn't. Caesar, it didn't end nicely. Oh, it just doesn't end nicely because once people don't have an idea, you give them an idea, you inspire them, you take them forward. But because everybody has their own idea, ultimately, then once they get what was the common goal, then having gained it, it doesn't mean that that goal can hold them together, right? Because it's a mundane goal, it's not Krishna. So then what will happen is they'll each then go their own way, and then those who were allies to gain a particular common goal then become, they lose their friendship. Does that make sense? But if that common goal is Krishna, Krishna being eternal, then that relationship can stay eternally, right? But if your common goal is something material, it's temporary, and temporary things always lose that niceness. Does that make sense? Nice. So just as the temporary is lost, that relationship will be lost. But if the relationship is based on the eternal, then it will remain eternally. Does that make sense? What do you think? Yes? So this is interesting, or you're generally thinking of riding on horses and jumping across ravines or something like that? Okay. For years, Abai had, you know, understand, so it's just practical. You see, if you read history, you see all these great personalities. It didn't end so well for them. So he's pointing out to him, this could happen to you. So therefore, retire now. You've done something great in the political field. You know, now get back to your real business, which is preaching Bhagavad Gita. Right? You do that, and then, you know, people will see you as that saintly person. You got the independence, and now you're preaching Gita. That will create the unity that he wants. Right? Because now, politically, there'll be no unity. Yes? No? Very good. Okay. For years, Abai had wanted to approach Mahatma Gandhi with this message. In fact, he had written before, although it had been of no avail. But now he is convinced that unless Gandhi got out of politics, he would soon die an inglorious death. The Gandhi was remaining active in politics rather than preaching devotional service, put him in need of a warning. Abai was writing to save a friend. Continuing the letter. You can easily understand as to how some of your political enemies in the garb of friends, both Indian and English, have deliberately cheated you and have broken your heart by doing the same mischief for which you have struggled so hard for so many years. You wanted chiefly Hindu-Muslim unity in India, and they have tactfully managed to undo your work by creation of the Pakistan and India separately. You wanted freedom for India, but they gave permanent dependence of India. You wanted to do something for the upliftment of the position of the Bungies, but they are still rotting as Bungies, even though you are living in the Bungie colony. They are all, therefore, illusions, and when these things will be presented to you as they are, you must consider them as God sent. God has favored you by dissipating the illusion you were hovering in, and the same illusion you were nursing those ideas as truth. Abai dutifully attempted to inform Gandhi that there was nothing absolute within this relative world. Ahimsa, or nonviolence, must always be followed by violence, as light is followed by darkness. Nothing is absolute truth in the dual world. You know this, wrote Abai. Neither you ever cared to know this. You do not know this. Yeah. Nothing is absolute truth in the dual world. You do not know this, wrote Abai. Neither you ever cared to know this from the right sources, and therefore all your attempts to create unity were followed by disunity, and ahimsa was followed by himsa. Right? Because only in connection with Krishna can you actually get very good results, lasting results. But dealing in the material world, even here, things are temporary. But by doing things in connection with Krishna, then one is connected to Krishna, and then there's no problem. You understand? If you're connected to Krishna, then there won't be any difficulty. Does that make sense? Even if in this world of dualism, things don't always go right, you'll be rightly situated. You'll be fine. You'll be absorbed in Krishna. You'll be satisfied. Yes? No? Abai pointed out that Gandhi had never undergone the standard practice for spiritual advancement, namely accepting a bona fide spiritual master. Although Bhagavad Gita declares the necessity of accepting a guru in disciplic succession. Yes? Then, what was the hand? How?
Looking at the hand.
Okay. Okay. Continue. Although Bhagavad Gita declares the necessity of accepting a guru in disciplic succession, Gandhi was well known for listening to his inner voice and for extracting ideas from various writers like Ruskin, Throw, and mixing them with the teachings from the New Testament and the Gita. Had Gandhi approached a guru, said Abhai, he would not have become bewildered within the sphere of relative truth. Continuing the letter. In the Katha Upanishad, it is ordered that one must approach the bona fide guru, who is not only well-versed in all scriptures of the world, but is also the realized soul in Brahman, the Absolute. In order to learn the science of absolute truth, so also it is instructed in Bhagavad Gita as follows. Tadbiri pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam jnanina tattvadarshinaha. Bhagavad Gita 4:34. But I know that you never underwent such transcendental teaching except some severe penances, which you invented for your purpose, as you have invented so many things in the course of experimenting with a relative truths. You might have easily avoided them if you had approached the guru as above mentioned. Recognizing Mahatma Gandhi's godly qualities and austerities, Abai requested him to employ his moral elevation for surrendering to the absolute truth. Abai urged him to get out of politics immediately. No, those things stay on. Those things here. They're very good if they're attached. If you pull them off, not so easy. By your sincere efforts to attain, continuing with the yet letter, but your sincere efforts to gain some godly qualities by austerities, etc., surely have raised you to some higher platform, which you can better utilize for the purpose of the absolute truth. If you, however, remain satisfied with such temporary position only, and do not try to know the absolute truth, then surely you are to fall down from the artificially exalted position under the laws of nature. In other words, he's gone through austerities, and by that he's elevated himself to some degree, but that elevation is actually temporary because it's not in connection with the absolute. Right? So it will automatically welcome back. It will automatically end. Like that, because it's not actual. He did his own kind of austerities, this and that. So any austerity will get some benefit, but the benefits will be temporary. So the point being made in Gita is, since you're going to do austerity, why not do it in connection with the Lord? Then you get actually lasting benefit. Yes? No? But if you want really to approach the absolute truth, I want to do some real good to the people in general all over the world, which shall include your identities of unity, peace, and nonviolence. Then you must give up the rotten politics immediately and rise up for the preaching work of the philosophy and religion of Bhagavad Gita, without offering unnecessary and dogmatic interpretation on them. I had occasionally discussed this subject in my paper, Back to Godhead, and a leaf from the same is enclosed herewith for your reference. I would only request you to retire from politics at least for a month only, and let us have discussion on the Bhagavad Gita. I am sure thereby that you shall get a new light from the result of such discussions, not only for your benefit, but for the benefit of the world at large, as I know that you are sincere, honest, and a moralist. Awaiting your early reply with interest, yours sincerely, Abhay Charan Day. There was no reply. A month later, Gandhi announced that he would fast until death unless India made a payment of 550 million rupees to Pakistan, a previous condition of the partition agreement. At first, Hindu refugees from Pakistan demonstrated outside Gandhi's darkened room, chanting, "Let Gandhi die." But as he fasted each day closer to death, he aroused the heartfelt concern of the nation. And the government leaders repaid the money to Pakistan. Then great crowds approached him, chanting, "Let Gandhi live." Meanwhile, Indian Hindu-Muslim violence continued. On January 30th, so that was when he sent the letter, December 7th. January 30th, a day after he had been drafted a new constitution for the Congress Party, Gandhi took his evening meal, worked at his spinning wheel, then walked towards his evening prayer meeting and was shot 3 times in the chest. He died crying out the name of God, "Hey Rama." Abhay's letter of the previous month suddenly read like a prophecy, but it had not been read by the person for whom it had been intended. When the directors of the Mahatma Gandhi Memorial National Fund invited suggestions on how to commemorate Gandhi's life and work, Abhay wrote to them and simultaneously to Vallabhai Patel, India's deputy prime minister, proposing the Gandhian way to use the funds. From the letter, Gandhi's whole life was dedicated to the service of humanity at large, with special interest for raising the moral standard. His later activities showed that he was equal to everyone, and all the people of the world knew him more as a spiritual leader than a mere politician. Devotion to Godhead was his ultimate aim, and when I say that his sacred memory should be perpetuated not in the ordinary way, but in the Gandhian way, I mean that fitting respects to his memory will be done in the following manner. Abhay wrote of Mahatma Gandhi, of a Mahatma Gandhi rarely described, right? Gandhi as a Vaishnava. Right? So generally they'd always write of him as a politician or somebody who, yes. Who shot Gandhi? It was somebody. I think it was one boy. He's from a Brahmin family. I think their family and all that went to a lot of trouble in Pakistan, because they lived on that side. And so when they came across, either this family was killed or this or that. So they got it together, there were like 8 people involved, I think, in it, like that. And so because of his independence, then Pakistan was created. Because of that, then, hundreds of thousands, I think, maybe even millions, I'm not sure, of Hindus were killed by the Muslims, right, and vice versa. So many people were not very pleased with the whole arrangement. But somehow or another, because he was killed by a Hindu, then, it just kind of ended an era. But if he had been shot by a Muslim, who knows how bad the riots would have been. But he was shot by a Hindu, so therefore then, what to do. Is that okay? Hmm.
Yeah, so Prabhupada's talking about Gandhi in relation to him being a devotee, because most didn't look at him that way. So he's trying to bring out, if you want to do something to commemorate Gandhi's life, what's commemorate? Something. Commemorate.
Honor?
Honor, yes, honor. Something to remember him by, honor, like that. Does that make sense? So if you want to commemorate, you know, just like yesterday we had Prabhupada's disappearance day, so you're commemorating, you know, Prabhupada's work and him as a person, as a devotee, all these things. So he's saying the best way to commemorate Gandhi is as a devotee, right? Because all the other things are temporary. Despite his pressing political activities, Gandhi had never missed his daily prayer meetings in the evenings. Even at the time of his assassination, he had been on his way to attend his daily kirtan. Abai stressed that it was because of Gandhi's regular participation in congregational prayer that he had been strong in his work to raise the moral standard of humanity. Right? So in other words, we can see here is that, okay, by chanting Hare Krishna, doing devotional service, it will automatically, as a side thing, raise the standard of the community. Right? The moral standard, the devotional standard, all that will naturally come up. Right? So now this person is trying to do it separately. But the point is that work is good. Right? That work is good. So taking that work, now all you have to do is continue that work, but instead of taking the work as the main thing, you take service to Krishna as the main. Right? Then your work will automatically get done. You understand? You see how Krishna's, Prabhupada's preaching method is here. He's not throwing out all that stupid, useless. Like before, he never said his work was useless. He said the illusion surrounding his work, that's the problem. Right? So therefore, you take the good work and build on that. But you don't build on that means you just do more welfare work. You show us the connection to Krishna. Right? So therefore, then you're engaging in the preaching and all those. Right? Okay, now this will go on for a while. Okay. Right, does this make sense? So that means he could see the good in whatever someone was doing. And then from there, move it forward. So therefore, in the life of a devotee, so many things we may be doing wrong, but you see what's good about it. And then you take that and then use that as a basis to connect to Krishna. Right, does that make sense? Right, then things work nicely. Yes? No? Very good. Maybe something? Not sure.
Sure.
Okay. Very good. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Parimananda ki.